It's July the 4th, and we are in Parshas Maaseh. We're on page 920. Bottom of the page, on page 920. Pasuk Nun, verse 50. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe b'arvos Moav al yarden yirecho lemar. Hashem spoke to Moshe on the plains of Moav, on the river of Yericho, saying. So this is, Hashem is now speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu. They're right on the outskirts of Eretz Yisrael, and Hashem says to Moshe, Dabrel ben Yisrael v'amarta alehem, speak to the Jews and say that to them, ki atem ovrim es hayarden al Eretz Kanaan, when you are crossing the Yarden, the Jordan River, to the land of Canaan. V'horashtem es kol yoshvei ha'aretz mipneichem. You will conquer, or it says in the English, you'll drive out all the dwellers of the land from before you. V'ibadetem es kol maskiosam. And you will destroy all of their maskios. Now, they translate that as prostration stones. So, what they used to do is pave a large area. Of course, they didn't have concrete or anything like that. They would lay stone out, smooth stone, and they would use it to bow upon it. So it was used for idolatry. You have to destroy that. The ace called Salmei Masechosam Tiabedu, and all of their idols you will destroy. The ace called Bamo Sam Tashmidu, and all of their altars you will also destroy. Now, if you hold the place here on page 922, I just want to show you about maskios, these prostration stones. If you turn back to the end of Sefer Vayikra, that pasuk tells us, let me just find it quickly here, it's actually, it's the end of Parshas Bahar, so it's not quite the end of Vayikra. Page 706. On page 706 it says, in Perek Chavav, chapter 26, Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, Lo sasu lachem elilim, do not make for yourself idols. Ufasa lumatseva lo sakimu lachem, different types of idolatries you shouldn't establish for yourselves. Ve'even maskis lo sitnu be'artzechem liyishtachavo soleha. And a prostration stone you should not put in your land to bow upon it. So this is the prohibition against us making our own even maskis. You cover the ground with this stone in order to bow on it. So we're not allowed to do it. And here in Parshas Maaseh, we're told that when we come across this formation in Israel, we are to destroy it because it was used for avodah zarah, for idolatry. In Parshas Bahar, on page 706, that is a prohibition against us making it even to bow down to Hashem. We're not allowed to do this because that is the way that they worship idols. So we're not allowed to do this even if we're bowing to Hashem. But since in Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Canaan, it was used to bow to idols, it's a form of idolatry and has to be destroyed. We talked about, at the end of Parshas Bahar, when we read this the first time, we talked about how this is why on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, when we bow to the ground, that we put some sort of a separation, a paper towel or some sort of a cloth underneath us, so that we're not bowing directly on the floor. As we mentioned at the time, the truth is that since here in the Kol it's carpeted, so the truth is it's not really necessary because we're not on stone. We're not even on a hard surface. Still, the custom is to put something underneath us for that reason. But if it was on stone, it would be a requirement to put something underneath us because we're not allowed to bow directly on stone in our lands. Now, in the Beis HaMikdash itself, the Beis HaMikdash, the floor was made of marble, which is stone. So there it was permitted. But outside the Beis HaMikdash, it is not permitted to bow directly on stone, and that's because of this prohibition. And here, back to page 922, it's referring to the practice that was done by the nations of the world, and we have to destroy those because those were used for Avodah Zar, for idolatry. Pasuk Nun Gimel, verse 53 on 922. Vahorashtem es haaretz vishavtem ba, you will conquer the land and you will dwell in it. Kilachem nasati es haaretz lareshes osa, for to you I have given the land to inherit it. It's your land. Vishnachaltem es haaretz bigorol lemishpachoseichem, you will give over the land as an inheritance, using the gorol, using the lottery, according to your families. L'arav tarbu es nachalaso, for the larger families and the larger tribes, you'll increase their inheritance. V'lama'at tam'it es nachalaso, for the fewer, the smaller families, the smaller tribes, you'll have a smaller inheritance. El asher yetze lo shama ha-gorol lo yiyeh, to where the lottery says that your portion comes out, that will be his. Lematos avoseichem tisnachalu, according to the tribes of your fathers, you will inherit, you will take the land. Vimoso rishu es yoshvei ha'aretz mipneichem, if you do not drive out those who dwell in the land from before you, v'haya asher tosiru mehem, it will be those who you leave over from them, lisikim be'eineichem, like spikes in your eyes, v'litzninim betzideichem, and they'll be like thorns in your sides, v'tzareru eschem, and they will give you pain, al ha'aretz asher atem yoshvim ba, on the land that you dwell upon it. So if you leave them out of an act of mercy or some sort of compassion, you should know they're going to give you trouble. V'haya kasher dimisi lasos lahem, and it will be that which I had intended to do to them, e'eseh lachem, I will do to you. Don't leave them around. Because if you do, then that which I had intended to do to them, which is enable you to drive them out, I will do to you, which is I'm going to enable them to drive you out. So don't leave them in the land. The Mefarshim explain over here that this is incremental, that first they will blind your eyes. That's what it means. They'll be like spikes in your eyes, which means they'll blind your eyes. You won't be able to see straight. You won't be able to perceive what is going on clearly. Rather, they will make you not be able to appreciate the Torah and Hashem in the right way. You'll see things in a blinded way. Then they will be like thorns in your sides, which means that they will kind of hem you in. You won't have any movement. You won't be able to do what you normally are able to do. They will then give you pain and trouble. And eventually, Hashem says, I will do to you what I intended to do to them, which is that they will drive you out of the land. So don't leave them in the land. Unfortunately, when Yehoshua, and then following Yehoshua, the Shoftim, when the Jews finally do conquer Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Canaan, they do leave pockets of non-Jews in the land that they were not supposed to leave in the land. That is all discussion in the books of Yehoshua and Shoftim, which one day, Be'ezras Hashem, we can learn. But that is what will happen, unfortunately, and they become a big problem for the Jewish people in the land. We are not living in Eretz Yisrael today, al pi geula, meaning this is not redemption. We are still in Golus. Even those living in Eretz Yisrael today are in Golus. So we are not in the way that we're supposed to be. But we definitely see that the fact that you keep people in the land who are not keeping the Torah certainly hurts us. Now, unfortunately, we Jews aren't all keeping the Torah. So it's not only the non-Jews who are in the land, but it certainly confuses matters. The Eretz Yisrael is meant to be a place that is owned and occupied by Jews. We're not required to throw out everybody, provided that those who stay accept the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, that they keep the seven mitzvahs that they're supposed to keep. And those nations of Canaan, those we were not allowed to have any of them remain in Eretz Yisrael. So sometimes it would seem like it's more compassionate to let them stay, be nice, etc. But the Torah guarantees us that that compassion will backfire. It's going against what Hashem says to do, and therefore it will backfire and it is a problem. The Mefarshim, the commentaries all ask over here that we have a major problem in this paragraph. The paragraph is clearly all about conquering Eretz Yisrael, and that you should conquer, get rid of the people in the land, make sure that you listen to what I'm saying, otherwise they're going to turn around and give you trouble, you're going to learn from their evil ways. But right in the middle, we have Pasuk Nun Dalet, verse 54, which is about giving the land out using a goral, using the lottery, and the tribes with more people, the tribes with fewer people, etc. That does not seem to fit in this paragraph. That was the discussion which we had before about the method of giving out the land. But what does the method of giving out the land have to do with removing all the people that are not supposed to be there, and the consequences if we don't remove all the people who are not supposed to be there? What does that have to do with how you give out the land? The commentaries ask this question. The Kli Yakar answers that the one could be tempted. There's a problem over here, because there's really a dual problem, a double-edged sword. First of all, Chazal tell us, our sages tell us, that we have a rule that says, Kidra devei shutfi lo chamimi v'lo kiriri. That means a kidra, a kedera, which means a pot of food, devei shutfi, that is owned by shutfin, by partners, partners who own a pot of food, lo kiriri v'lo chamimi, is neither cold nor hot. Which means that when you have something that more than one person is responsible for, that several people are responsible for, then no one takes full responsibility. And you end up with a situation where the pot is not cold, because nobody allows it to get really cold, because no one wants it to get completely, everybody kind of like helps out a little bit, but no one takes full responsibility to heat it up the way it's supposed to be heated up. We know that this is true. Think about it. Anytime you're dealing with something with somebody else, whether it's in a marriage or in a business, anytime you have a responsibility that is not clear whose responsibility it is, so it doesn't actually get handled. So so this analogy, the pot doesn't get freezing cold, but it also doesn't get hot. So there's a concern over here that the Jews would all pass the buck. You know, we conquered the land. Yeah, there's a pocket of non-Jews here. There's a pocket of non-Jews there. It's not my problem. It's his problem. It's not his problem. It's his problem. No, it's his problem. It's his problem. Everybody's going to kind of pass the buck and not really take responsibility to remove all the people from the land who are supposed to be removed from the land. Also, one could be tempted to say that, you know, that area over there, that looks difficult to conquer. I don't want to go and try to conquer that area. There's a lot of people over there. The terrain is rough. I would rather just take this land over here. Why should I go and take that land over there where it's tough to conquer them? So the Torah emphasizes over here, no one here has any choice. We were all given very specific land in Eretz Yisrael, and it is each one of our responsibility. My land is my responsibility. Your land is your responsibility. Your land is your responsibility. And whoever has the people that need to be removed from that land, it is that person's responsibility to remove those people. It doesn't mean he has to fight all by himself, but someone has to be the one to take responsibility. Who's achrayus? Whose responsibility is it? It is the one who owns that particular piece of land. They need to make sure that piece of land is treated the way it's supposed to be treated. One last point on this paragraph is that the paragraph begins in Pasuk Nun Aleph 51 on the previous page. It says, speak to the Jewish people, Ki atem ovrim es hayarden l'eretz Kanaan, when you're crossing the Jordan into the land, then you should do the following. You should wipe out all the, you should destroy all the avodah zarah, all the idolatry, etc. So Rashi tells us, why does it say it this way when you are crossing the Jordan River? So Rashi says, Elakach amar lahem Moshe. This is what Moshe was saying to them. Kishatem ovrim bayardin bayabasha. When you are crossing the Jordan on dry land, amenas kein tavru. You should cross on this condition. V'im lav. And if you do not accept this condition, that you will get rid of the idolatry and the people who worship it. Mayim boyim b'shotfin eschem. Water will come and drown you. You will be washed away. And Yehoshua told them the same thing when they were in the Jordan River. The Jordan River, when they crossed it, first of all, the Jordan in those days was a bit much wider and more of a raging river than it is today. And when they crossed the Jordan River in the days of Yehoshua, so the water was coming downstream, and it got to where the Jews were going to cross, and Hashem made the water go up instead of straight. And it just went up into the air. And the Jews crossed. But as they were crossing, the water was still coming downstream, and then the water just kept going up in the air. So as the Jews are crossing, this wall, massive wall of water, was very tall and very wide. Wall of water is building up bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger as the Jews are crossing. Not only that, they didn't cross right away. They went into the middle of the river, and while they were in the riverbed, Yehoshua made a bris, made a covenant with them. And this water is on their side, which is towering above them. And the message was very clear, that at any moment, this water could just crash down upon them and wash them all away, and wipe them out. And the condition for being able to cross into Eretz Yisrael was to accept these rules that you will destroy all of the Avodah Zarah, all of the idolatry, and you will remove all the people who are there, who are idolaters, that they should not cause you to sin while you are there in living in Eretz Yisrael. Living in Eretz Yisrael is meant to be a place where we will serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu and not succumb to the sins of the people who were already there before us. Perek Lamed Daled, chapter 34, starting with the beginning of the chapter, on 9:22. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemar, Hashem speaks to Moshe saying, Tzavis b'nei Yisrael v'amar ta'alem, command the Jewish people and say to them, Ki atem boyim el ha'aretz Kanaan, when you come to the land of Kanaan, Zos ha'aretz asher tipol lachem b'nachala. This is the land that will fall to you as an inheritance. Eretz Kanaan ligvulo seha. The land of Kanaan according to its boundaries. Here the Torah will give us the official boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. You want to know what are the official boundaries of Eretz Yisrael? This is the paragraph in the Torah. There is no other paragraph in the Torah that gives us the specific boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. You have more vague references, like from the river of Prus to someplace else, from the Mediterranean. There's some vague references to borders, but not specific. This is the specific list of the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. Now, there's a map that they include here in the stone Chumash. The map is their best approximation of how it works. It's not easy to know exactly where all these landmarks are that we're going to read about. However, if you take a look at the map, we're going to go through some of, well, we'll go through the psukim, we'll go through the verses and follow the map. We're going to go around Eretz Yisrael in a, we'll call it a circle. It's really more of a square, sort of, but it's going to begin from the southeast corner. That's where we're going to begin, the southeast corner. In the place on the map, you see that in bold letters, Ma'ale Akrabim. That's going to be the southeast corner. We're going to start from there. And we're going to go left. We're going to go west. along the western border, actually it's the southern border, but east to west, it doesn't go straight across. As you see, it dips down and then kind of dips up again all the way till you get to the Mediterranean Sea. Then we're going to move north along the Mediterranean Sea all the way up to where it says Mount Hor. All the way up there. At Mount Hor, we're going to turn right and we're going to go directly east. And we're going to get to that place called, they call it Zidud or Zedud. I'm sorry, before we do that, Mount Hor is a machlokus where it is. There's two of them on that map. You see there's a lower one and a higher one. It's not exactly clear where each of these places are. That's one of the issues I was mentioning to you. Then we're going to move east and then south again, going through the Yam Kineret, the Yam Kineret over there on the top of Eretz Yisrael, and moving further south along the Jordan River, and then the Dead Sea, back to Maale Akrabim. So let's go through, and then we'll talk about this map a little bit and what its ramifications are for us today. So we'll read this through somewhat quickly. You can follow along in the map if you want to see the places that are mentioned in the Psukim. So Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Vayalachem pas Negev, and your southern border will be Mimid Bar Tzin al Yedei Edom, from the wilderness of Tzin next to the country of Edom. Edom is south of Eretz Yisrael. Vayalachem Gvul Negev, and your southern border will be Miktzei Yam HaMelach Kedma, from the edge of the Dead Sea, of the Salt Sea, on the eastern, really the southeastern edge of the Dead Sea. They don't label the Dead Sea, but those of you who are familiar with the map, that body of water at the bottom of the Jordan River is the Dead Sea, the Salt Sea. So that's where you're going to start, in the southeast corner of that Dead Sea. Pasuk Dal, verse 4. V'nasav lochem ha-gevul minegev l'male akrabim, and the border will turn towards the south of Ma'ale Akrabim. It'll go south of that place called Ma'ale Akrabim, which means Ma'ale Akrabim is north of the border, which means it's inside Eretz Yisrael. Va'avar Tzina, and it will pass to the place called Tzin. V'hayu totz osav minegev l'kadesh barnea, and its, they translate it as, its outskirts will be to the south of Kadesh Barnea. Kadesh Barnea is on the map. If it's to the south of Kadesh Barnea, that means Kadesh Barnea is inside the boundary. V'yatza Chatzar Adar, and then it will go outside of a place called Chatzar Adar. V'avar Atzmono, and it will pass towards Atzmon. Atzmon is on the bottom of the map. V'nasav ha-givul me'atzmon nachla Mitzrayim, and then the border will turn from Atzmon to the it's not really the river of Egypt, it's more I think they call it a wadi. It's not the Nile River, but it is some sort of a waterway of Egypt. And its outskirts will be the ocean, which means the Mediterranean Sea. So we've gone from east to west along the southern border until the Mediterranean Sea. Now we turn north and go up the coast. Ugvul Yam, and the western border, V'ayalachem Hayama Gadol Ugvul, and it will be for you the Mediterranean Sea, the great ocean, and its boundary. This will be for you the western border. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Gittin that the way that the pasuk is written tells us that not only is the Mediterranean over there the western border of Eretz Yisrael, but if you look back at the map, if you draw an imaginary line in the ocean from the tip of where the land juts out towards the north of Eretz Yisrael, you see towards the north of the map, the top of the map, you see how the land kind of juts out a little bit, draw an imaginary line from there down to the southwest border, then you'll be kind of cutting along part of the Mediterranean Sea. Any islands that are found within that imaginary line are considered to be part of Eretz Yisrael. Any islands outside of that imaginary line will be considered not part of Eretz Yisrael. So even though it's not contiguous with the landmass itself, those islands that are within that imaginary line will be part of Eretz Yisrael. Back on page 924, Pasuk Zion, verse 7, V'zei Yelachem Gvul Tzafon, this will be your northern border. We're now going to turn from west to east along the northern border. Minayam HaGadol Tesulachem Hor Har, from the great ocean, which is the Mediterranean, you will turn towards Hor HaHar. Mehor HaHar Tisa'ul Avo Chamas, from Hor HaHar you'll then turn towards Chamas. V'yusotzos HaGivul Tzedada, and the outskirts of the boundary will be towards Tzedad. So Tzedad is on the map. The question is exactly where is Hor HaHar and where is Hamas? Hamas in English is written as Hamas. Same word. But so the question is, there's two Hor HaHars on the map, and there's two Hamases on the map. The question is exactly which one are we talking about, so that's a matter of debate. Pasuk Tes verse 9. V'yatzah ha'gavul Zifrona, and the boundary will then go out towards Zifron. V'yusotz osav chatzar einan, and its outskirts will be chatzar einan. That's Zifron and chatzar einan are both on the map. V'zei alachem gavul tzafon, that'll be your northern border. So when we got to chatzar einan, that's considered to be the end of the northern border. Now from there, we're going to now cover the eastern border. V'isavisem lachem l'gvul kedma. Now you'll turn for yourselves for the eastern border. Mechatzar Einan Shifama. From Chatzar Einan to Shifam. You're now going to turn from Chatzar Einan to Shifam. Shifam is not on the map, but the next place will be on the map. V'arara gavul mishifam hariv la mikerem la'ayin. You're going to go down, which means from north to south. You're going to go down from Shifam to Rivla, to on the east of La'ayin. Ayin means a spring of water, to the east of the spring of water. So that means the spring of water will be inside the boundary. V'arara gavul umacha al kesef yam kineres kedma. And the boundary will continue south, going down. And it will go along the edge of the Kinneret, of the Yam Kinneret, on the eastern side of it, which means, this is critical, the entire Yam Kinneret is inside the boundary of Eretz Yisrael. The boundary runs along the eastern border of Yam Kinneret. We know today that as far as water is concerned in Eretz Yisrael, the Yam Kinneret is a huge, huge part of the water of Eretz Yisrael, and the Torah makes it clear that Yam Kinneret is inside the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. That's a clear, unequivocal statement from the Torah. Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12. V'arara gavul ha'yardena. So now the boundary will continue south towards the Jordan. V'yusotzosav Yam HaMelach, and its outskirts will be the Salt Sea. So now we've completed our circuit all the way down to the southeast border. Zos tielachem haaretz ligvulaseh saviv. This will be the land for its boundaries all around. Vayitzav Moshe es b'nei Yisrael lemar. Moshe commanded the b'nei Yisrael saying, Zos haaretz asher tisnachalu osa b'gorol. This will be the land that you will give over as an inheritance using the lottery. Asher tziva Hashem laseis l'sishas hamatos v'chatzi hamateh, that Hashem has commanded to give it to the 9.5 tribes. Why not 12 tribes? So we already know. Ki lakhu matei v'nei haru v'ni l'veis avosam, u'matei v'nei hagodi l'veis avosam, because the tribe of Reuven and the tribe of Gad have already taken And also, half the tribe of Menashe took their inheritance already. The 2.5 tribes, they took their inheritance on the other side of the Jordan River, towards the east. So therefore, they're not included in these boundaries here. Why do we need to know the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael? Why is that important for us to know? So you'll say, well, otherwise, how would we know where Eretz Yisrael is? Why do we need to know where Eretz Yisrael is? When Hashem brings us there, we'll know where it is. Avram didn't know where it was. He knew where Eretz Canaan was. He didn't know where he was going. Why do we need to know? Because we need to know how to advocate against the British to make sure they give us the correct land. Why? It's not the time of Mashiach right now. Why do we need to know the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael? Why is that important? We take it as like a given. Well, of course we have to know where Eretz Yisrael is. Why? Why do we need to know? What's the important reason for us to know where exactly Eretz Yisrael is?
Aren't there certain mitzvos that we're living in that place?
Okay, excellent. So the reason is because of the mitzvos. That's the only reason. There is no other reason for us to know the answer to that question. The reason why we need to know the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael is because there are rules that govern produce and other things in Eretz Yisrael that are different outside of Eretz Yisrael. You have to know about Truma and Meiser and Shemitah. These are things we have to know about, which we would not know if we did not know the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. That is the reason. Now, there are other points like the Kedusha, the holiness of Eretz Yisrael. There's certainly a special thing about the land itself. But the reason we need to know it is because of the mitzvos. There's another reason why we need to know it besides the agricultural mitzvos. And that is, as the Ramban writes, that going back to the previous paragraph on page 922, to that pasuk, that verse which we called out, we showed it didn't really fit, pasuk Nundal 54, v'isnachaltem es ha'aretz begoro l'mishpachos seichem, that you should give over the land to your families, and you should take the land. I'm trying to remember if that's the correct pasuk. I just make sure I don't get this wrong. Give me 1 minute, please. Hold on. I'm 95% positive that that's the right pasuk, but it's a shame if I got it wrong, because you'll hear in a minute why it's a shame. I think it's actually the previous one. I think it's Nun Gimel 53. You will inherit the land and dwell in it, because I gave the land to you to inherit. The Ramban writes, this is the pasuk that is the mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. Where in the Chumash does it say there's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael? We know there is such a mitzvah. People talk about it all the time. Where does it say it? The Ramban writes that this is the pasuk. Nun Gimel 53 is the pasuk. Rashi does not agree. Rashi reads this pasuk that if you drive out the people, then you will be able to live there. It's not a commandment to live in Eretz Yisrael. Rather, it is a statement that if you want to be there, this is what you're going to have to do in order to be there. But it is not a commandment to live in Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban writes, this is the source for the mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. Well, if you don't know where Eretz Yisrael is, you can't fulfill that mitzvah. So it's not fair for the Torah to tell us you should live in Eretz Yisrael and not tell us where it is. So according to the Ramban, that this pasuk is telling us there's a mitzvah to live there, then obviously the Torah has to tell us, where is it? And that is what happens now in this paragraph that we just read, outlining the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. So the reason for the boundaries are the mitzvos. Certainly the mitzvos of agriculture, and then possibly also the mitzvah to live there. As an aside, we all, of course, love Eretz Yisrael, and we all value Eretz Yisrael, and we all know that we want to eventually be there. The part of the debate that has gone on for over a century is how essential is this mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. One can certainly, if this is the source, one can certainly look at it and say, it's one mitzvah, there are 613 mitzvahs, it's no different than any other mitzvah. So when discussing the importance of living in Eretz Yisrael, one has to, of course, also discuss all the other mitzvos and figure out what is viable and what's not for various situations. All things being equal, I think everybody would agree one should live in Eretz Yisrael. How could one not say that? But over the course of time, some have put a lot of emphasis on this mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. And certainly we know that many gedolim over the generations have put great emphasis on this mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. Now, looking at this map of the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, we have a very, very important, we have several important observations to make. If these are the boundaries, they don't really fit perfectly with the current state of Israel. First of all, if you look at the map carefully, obviously the West Bank and the Gaza Strip are all part of Eretz Yisrael. That's clear. But so is all of Lebanon. So is part of Syria. Depending on exactly how you draw the map, you're going to end up certainly with all of Lebanon and part of Syria as part of the land of Eretz Yisrael. So that's very important. Conversely, if you look at the bottom part of the map, it doesn't go that far south. If one is living in the modern state of Israel towards the southern part of the country, they are not in what is biblically Eretz Yisrael. So when we talk about a biblical claim to the land, it's important to note that yes, we have a biblical claim to the land, but it's not precisely the borders of the current state of Israel. So that is something to bear in mind whenever these questions come up of what exactly is our claim to the land. In addition, when it comes to the mitzvos of we'll get to Truman Meister in a minute, but when it comes to the holiness of Eretz Yisrael, when you're in the, we'll call it the deep south of Eretz Yisrael, you are not on holy ground. There's, without a doubt, if you are in a lot, you are not in holy ground, and not just because it's a lot. But it's not holy. It's not Israel. It's not Eretz, it is Israel, but it's not Eretz Yisrael. It's not the biblical land of Eretz Yisrael. Now, as far as the actual requirement of Trumos and Maisos, etc., that is actually not so simple for two reasons. First of all, this land that has been delineated is the land that we'll call of the first conquest, meaning when we first came into Eretz Yisrael under Yehoshua, this was the land that was considered Eretz Yisrael. David HaMelech actually expanded the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael beyond what we have over here. So we actually had more land than this. But this was considered to be Eretz Yisrael. And of course, we also had the other side of the Jordan River, which was not the same level as these boundaries, but we also had that land. We had much more land than is pictured here. But the second Beis HaMikdash the land that was conquered was much smaller. The second Beis HaMikdash was only the area of Yerushalayim and around Yerushalayim. Essentially the West Bank. That's basically where the land of what the second conquest was. So the reason why that's important is because there's a raging machlokas about the requirement of the mitzvos of Truma and Meiser and Shemitah and all that, and whether it applies outside of the boundaries of the second conquest. If it doesn't apply outside of the second conquest, then we're talking about a much smaller area than what you see here on this map. So that's one reason why it's not so simple to look at this map and say, oh, that's where Trumas and Maisos and Shemitah apply. It's more complicated than that. But there's another reason it's more complicated than that, and that is because, like with all mitzvos, you have the Torah law, and then you have the rabbinic additions, like everything. Torah, you don't eat meat and milk together. Well, rabbinically, we don't eat chicken and milk together. So there's always going to be more that is added because of the Rabbanon. That's with all mitzvos. Well, the mitzvah of Eretz Yisrael is the same thing. You have the part that is from the Torah, and then you have other parts that the rabbis added for various reasons. Part of it was because of confusion. You don't realize you crossed the border. Part of it was because there were certain countries in the immediate vicinity of Eretz Yisrael that a lot of produce came in from those countries and easily got mixed up. And so there were different areas that were added rabbinically to the mitzvos, including Syria, including Egypt, including what is present-day Jordan. There's various areas around Eretz Yisrael that each one has its own special rules, but there were various additions made. So you can't just look at the map and say, oh, this is where we take off Truma and Meiser, and not there. It's not so simple. And like with all mitzvos, it's complex, and it's not a one-size-fits-all answer. Different lands are going to have different rules for these things. One can expand the discussion to where do you keep one day of Yom Tov and where do you keep 2 days of Yom Tov, right? So all of this will of course be impacted by the exact boundaries, but then also the rabbinic additions. So this is the Torah presentation of the official boundaries in the first conquest. What makes it even more complicated is that this was the seven nations of Canaan. But Avraham Avinu was told in the Bris Bein Abisarim that you will get 10 nations. And Rashi explains over there, the last three will be given to us when Mashiach comes. That means when Mashiach comes, the boundaries are actually going to be bigger than what you see here on this map. So at the end of the day, it's not going to be simply this. Of course, we have to know this. This is in the Torah. Anything in the Torah you have to know. But practically speaking, exactly how it plays out is not as simple as just looking at this map. And as you hear, there's complexity in each of these pieces for how it works. Any questions?
So the farmers and Eilat have to keep...
Okay, the question is, do the farmers and Eilat have to keep Shemitah? Coming up to a Shemitah year.
Right.
So that is a good question. I don't know how we rule that far south. I don't know how we rule that far south. It could be they do, but I don't know. I don't know. I never looked into it. I don't know about it. Somebody was telling me about a tiyul that they took with their Rosh Yeshiva, going south in Eretz Yisrael. And when they passed a certain point, this Rebbe of theirs was always very careful, is always very careful not to speak disparagingly about Eretz Yisrael. But after they passed a certain point going south, he's a little bit of a character, when they passed a certain point going south, he said, now we are in a place that everybody agrees is outside Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, we don't have to be careful about speaking about this land. So, I don't know what the rule is when you get that all the way down there. Whether it's going to have a rabbinic rule of Shemitah or not. All right. Okay. We are going to stop a little bit early tonight because I have another shiur on the back of this one. And I'm going to just announce this when we came in, that we have one more class, Mitzvah Hashem, next week. Next week is July 11th. We'll have one more class before we break for the summer.